Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today we're going to do a quick hit kind of session on just talking about what's going on with loans with the debt ceiling and just talk about a little bit about what's going on with PSLF numbers. There's a couple new numbers that came out from the administration that are pretty shocking and pretty exciting. If you're a public service borrower or also if you're going for income-driven repayment, I think it's pretty doggone exciting too. Just to kind of jump right in, first of all, the debt ceiling battle, why does that pose kind of like an outside risk towards student loan borrowers? Think about just the deficits that we're running, about $2 trillion at the moment. Supposedly, that's double last summer's deficit, according to Committee for Responsible Federal Budget. Obviously, everybody's got deficit on the mind, right? And different people have different things in the mind. So at this point, student loan forgiveness is very much a top priority of the Republican Party to block. Partly because it does show up as a big expense in the deficit, and Republicans are trying to go after this in particular. Now, on the flip side to that, President Joe Biden also had a kind of, I think, a record low approval rating poll that came out recently. I think I saw it was at 36%. And most Democrats in his party don't want him to run again for president, even though he just announced. Now, you know, with Joe Biden kind of pushing the South Carolina primary forward and just everybody kind of getting out of the way for him to run, it's pretty clear that the establishment of the Democratic Party is very much on board with him running. But I think what's really concerning if you're Joe Biden is you need to hold together your party's base, especially. So that progressive base that is so important for you to get your party's nomination and retain your party's support and not start having a bunch of whisper campaigns happening from other people that want to run for president as to why you shouldn't run. Joe Biden's got to keep that group together. So you've got really two parties with totally different priorities right now. So Joe Biden kind of needs student loan forgiveness as something that is something that appeals to younger voters because that's the group he probably struggles with the most. So if he loses out on student loan forgiveness or at least can't appeal to young borrowers on student loan forgiveness, then this is something that's going to potentially imperil his chances not only to win the presidency, but to get renominated for it. And like any politician, he very much wants this, right? Student loans are a lot bigger deal and a lot more kind of front and center than they normally are. And you've got a couple things happening. So a Department of Education recently announced that over 600,000 borrowers have had $42 billion in debt forgiven via PSLF since October 2021 when they started the PSLF waiver process. Now, that is a lot. That's a whole lot. And a lot of that is coming from counting things like forbearance and deferment. That's kind of a key part in getting all that forgiven. You know, they're closing in on that $144 billion number that we thought might be eligible in terms of the total amount of debt that could be forgiven. Now, the reason that so much more has been forgiven is because of this forbearance and deferment counting. Obviously, if you're counting forbearance and deferment, that really widens the pool of people that could potentially get forgiveness to basically any public servant that consolidates, that's got 10 years of credit working at a job, not necessarily in repayment. What's kind of fascinating about that is it's a little bit of a, you know, I don't know if you've heard the dark branded memes, right? Where like Joe Biden's going Super Saiyan mode and just taking down his foes. It kind of, I don't know, it's a thing on social media. So if we think about Joe Biden wanting to kind of have something to show off for, it's definitely this forgiveness number. I mean, it's quite impressive, right? $42 billion when everybody, you know, a couple years ago was talking about how PSLF was fake news. I mean, really big change and not a whole lot of time. I kind of almost view this publication of this loan forgiveness number as targeted towards, you know, younger voters, the progressive base that Joe Biden needs to hold together, trying to show, you know, what have you done for me lately? Take a look at this. Wow, $42 billion. My administration is responsible for that. And if you notice, like whenever they come out with these announcements, it's always like the Biden and Harris administration, you know, has delivered for you, right? Like, I mean, anybody would do that, but it's very intentional, right? You're trying to get good PR out of all this work that you did, which makes sense. Obviously, we're thrilled for our borrowers that have gotten forgiveness, and a lot of it is because of the PSLF waiver. So why could this be a challenge with the debt ceiling negotiations? So on the Republican side, Republicans, and this is really all Republicans, including the moderate ones, are trying to shut down student debt cancellation and shut down the new repay plan through something called the Congressional Review Act. This is something that Congress, with simple majorities, can put forward a bill in the House and Senate, and if it passes, it can block something that an executive branch is trying to do. Now, it probably doesn't matter if Congress does that. You know, Joe Biden can still have other options, right? Veto, whatever. But, you know, this is something that, also keep in mind, you've got a Democratic Senate, so you would need, you know, more than just Joe Manchin to switch over for this even to get to Joe Biden. So it's not super likely, I think, that this happens, but it does pose a fairly significant risk. Because say you got a lot of folks interested in voting against the student loan kind of relief provisions the Biden administration is doing, then that could pose a risk to borrowers who are counting on getting something like new repay as a benefit. Now, the Supreme Court, that's really the big thing, the big, I don't know, anvil to fall, right? It's kind of interesting in our world because the IDR waiver is a huge deal. So many people need help on the IDR waiver. So many people don't even understand how much they could benefit. A lot of people could consolidate and get years of extra credit towards forgiveness, and that would save them thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. But on the flip side, if you consolidate needlessly, then that would maybe make you have to recertify your income-based payment, and that would raise your payments by thousands of dollars. So it is a pretty high-stakes situation. Think about what happens in our world. We get a lot of information as to how people are thinking about things, because when we try to talk to reporters about the IDR waiver, what we consistently hear back is something like, well, that's all well and good, but I just care about the Supreme Court case and I'm waiting for them to announce that. And then I'll think about student loans again. I mean, that really says a lot, right? When personal finance reporters like that, whose job it is to cover a student loan beat, don't care about talking about student loans because this cancellation case is taking up the news and all the bandwidth. And I think this is another, you know, go back to that social media meme joke. This is another dark branded move. I mean, this is genius. If you're a progressive activist or you're a policy person in the Democratic Party, what better way to accomplish your goals than to throw out some big controversial thing that's going to suck up all the media attention and get all the focus and all the coverage? Meanwhile, you're creating a new repayment plan that's going to make 80% of people go for forgiveness instead of repayment. You are drastically expanding what counts as an actual payment on all these forgiveness-based plans where you have to pay based on your income. You're extending the period to which that people have to recertify their income all the way to 2025. You are making it so that these different kinds of forbearances and deferments can count longer term. You're making it so that you get weighted average credit when you consolidate towards income-driven repayment. You're subsidizing interest in a huge way and getting that sort of wish list of the bill that would allow everyone to refinance to 3%. That's not what this new repay is going to do, right? It's kind of income-based subsidies. You know, if you have a higher income, you get low subsidies or no subsidies. If you have a lower income, you get a big subsidy. But you're essentially accomplishing, I would say, you know, 80% of the Democratic Party's sort of, and especially like the sort of Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party's wish list on student loans. Meanwhile, you know, you've got your opponents that are just kind of totally head in the sand, head screwed on backwards, their blinders on. They have no idea what's going on, I don't think. I mean, I really don't think that the Republican Party has any clue. And it doesn't matter if they listen to a podcast like this, because they still won't have any clue. So, the progressive student loan folks are really running circles around the Republican Party on many different ways. I mean, also, like, you know, when they came out with the announcement that the new repay plan was going to cost $130 billion over 10 years, you know, and the interest subsidy portion, they were estimating, I think, at something like $10 billion or something along those lines. I looked at that and I was just like, wow, that's a very aggressive assumption, you know, that we're going to have the subsidies as good as they are in new repay, and it's only going to cost $10 billion. I mean, so basically, you've got very smart policy people that are really delivering a ton of student loan relief, all the while, you know, the conservative crowd is just focused on the, I don't know what a good analogy would be, but they're, you know, looking up at the sky while the city's being raided or something like that. So some thoughts on the student loan borrowers, just what's going on with everything. You know, can you feel safe about the debt ceiling? I think that the debt ceiling, there's going to be some sort of compromise, but they probably want to drag it out until the Supreme Court makes their decision, right? Like, if you're Biden, why would you put in cancellation into a compromise on the debt ceiling when you're going to start defaulting in June? That's probably a little bit aggressive. They'd probably be able to do some kind of workarounds and indirect stuff to try to get that debt ceiling limit pushed till July. At that point, surely the Supreme Court will have announced the student loan case. So then Biden doesn't have to be the one to stop the Supreme Court or to stop the cancellation, right? That's another thing I think you can pretty well count on, is there's no way that Biden is going to throw student loans into the debt ceiling until after the Supreme Court's made up its mind on cancellation, right? Because again, he doesn't want to shoot off his own foot, right? He doesn't want to risk looking like a you know, moderate conservative to the base that he needs to win the nomination for president this coming cycle, right? So I think that we'll see the Supreme Court case drop first, and then we'll have this new repay rule. Probably, I would assume they will wait to publish it until after the debt ceiling, because maybe they don't necessarily want to agree over this or compromise over this. It would be quite shocking if there was some sort of big compromise around income-driven repayment in the debt ceiling negotiations, because I think that this is something that would be done in the context of a Higher Education Act reauthorization, and that's not the focus here. The debt ceiling is the focus. I would think that borrowers can be pretty safe around this. I mean, look at the IDR waiver, right? Look at the PSLF waiver. Opponents, we were worried about opponents stopping these programs, but they have not. They've not filed suits. They've not been successful in halting anything. The IDR waiver is something that is probably going to happen as is. I mean, we haven't seen any lawsuits around FFEL loans yet, so that's fairly encouraging. Now, there's one kind of big question mark that I kind of noticed in a borrower file recently. One of the issues with a lot of these very old subsidized loans is that they are subsidized loans and not unsubsidized loans. So an example is if you took out loans in the 90s or something like that, or 2000s, there's a good chance that all of the loans you took out for undergrad were subsidized student loans. Now, when you consolidate those over the years, they go into a direct consolidated subsidized loan. And then if you took out loans for grad school later, then you might have a direct consolidation unsubsidized loan. And so here again is why I think it's important to get help if you need it and you have significant debt, or a follow-up consult if you've already gotten some of that guidance. Is the administration going to apply all of that extra credit from the 90s onto your direct consolidation unsubsidized loan? Or are they only going to apply the amount of credit on that direct consolidation unsubsidized based off of the repayment history of all of the unsubsidized loans lumped together? It would make sense if they decide to not put that subsidized loans on the unsubsidized, you know, if they take the undergrad credit and they don't apply it to the grad loan credit. Now, they would have applied it if there was at least one unsubsidized loan from undergrad that got consolidated with all the grad school stuff. So this is how this stuff is just so confusing. And it's not just that either, but economic hardship deferment is the type of deferment that counts for this waiver after 2013. The question is there a certain type of graduate fellowship deferment that doesn't count after 2013, whereas economic hardship deferment does count? So this is just really confusing. This is just layers upon layers upon layers. And we're finding out more and more and more now that the IDR waiver rules are published. And it really, I think, is something that can save people a lot of money and get a lot of clarity. So we'd love to hear your questions for the pod, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. I'll say if you're a current client of Student Loan Planner, or you bought one of our investing courses or financial planning courses, check your email this week. I think you're going to be really excited about an announcement that we're going to make. So that's all I'll say about that. So if you are a current customer of Student Loan Planner, or you bought one of our courses, double check your email. And if you don't get any emails for some reason, just message me and ask at help@studentloanplanner.com. Folks, I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope you don't get too stressed on the debt ceiling. I hope you've got some really fun plans and vacation plans set up for the summer. Until next time, this is Travis with the Student Loan Planner Podcast.